Over the last decade, drug war-related violence has steadily increased in the Mexican honky-tonk towns across the border from the United States. But now it's spreading into more affluent cities, and the Mexican government's recent strategies for dealing with the crisis have been called into question. Nick Steinberg is a researcher for Human Rights Watch. His article, The Monster and Monterrey, appears in The Nation, and I'm pleased to welcome him to our show for today's second backstory segment. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
So what is the monster you refer to in your title?
The monster is a whole mix of problems that have been building in places like Monterrey and really across Mexico for decades. But the monster has really reared its head in the last several years, and it refers to cartel drug violence.
Well, I could understand the cartels in cities like Juarez and Tijuana. They are this kind of lawless even before. But Monterrey is considered one of the financial capitals of Mexico, isn't it?
Yes, Monterrey is a very, until recently, was a very stable city. It was not only one of the safest cities in Mexico, but in all of Latin America. It's very developed. It's home to high-tech industry, European, U.S. companies, and looked untouchable, looked like it couldn't be affected by this drug violence.
How many people live there?
About 4 million.
Wow, that's such a large city.
It's a very large city, and it's a very important city in Mexico.
And you said until recently it was stable. What impact has the violence had on its economy?
Well, you know, a lot of businesses that have long been very comfortable operating in Monterrey are now abandoning the city, especially for international businesses. The cost of doing business in Monterrey because of security is so high that many of them are thinking about relocating elsewhere.
So I'm assuming people were surprised, at least at first, when the situation, this dangerous situation that has taken something like 35,000 lives in Mexico over the past few years, moved a little inland into a more affluent place like Monterrey. Is it just because the drug cartels are going to move everywhere in Mexico?
Well, Monterrey, there was one cartel called the Gulf Cartel, which really controlled a lot of the traffic of drugs coming through Nuevo León, which is the state where Monterrey is, and also several other states in the Northeast. And there was a rupture in this cartel. The enforcement arm of the cartel, which is a group known as the Zetas, really broke off and went on its own. And when this group, the Zetas, fought with what had been kind of the parent organization for both the Gulf Cartel, the state really collapsed inward. And all of the relationships that used to prop up that cartel then became leveraged with one group or another.
So it wasn't a matter of drugs moving into Monterrey. It's just a matter of a drug war of erupting in the city because of a power struggle between drug cartels.
Exactly. Monterrey and much of northern Mexico has been a transit route for narcotics for decades. The real split, a couple key things happened. One was this break between the cartels. Also, in the late 80s in the U.S., the U.S. really cut off Miami as a route for cocaine to flow through. And a lot of those drugs started flowing through Mexico.
Now, is it just a matter of drugs or do these gangs do other things? Do businesses have to pay for protection?
Cartels, we used to be able to just call them drug cartels, and it was a fair name. This is really an issue of organized crime now. Less than half of their income comes from drug trafficking. It's the trafficking of migrants, prostitution, extortion, like you said, kidnapping. They're in every illicit industry that you can be in.
So this is just like the mobs in any country. In the United States, the mob was kind of similar until eventually the FBI was able to kind of cut it off at the knees. But it still exists.
That's correct. I mean, this is organized crime. This is a sophisticated and very diverse organization that's running a lot of different businesses.
Reuters ran a report yesterday with the headline, "If Monterrey Falls, Mexico Falls." Do you feel the situation is that serious?
I think that Monterrey, places like Monterrey, it used to be the anomaly, the places where the drug violence was touching. And now what is exceptional are places that haven't been touched by the drug violence. So I think that the question now is Mexico has a huge problem. Up until now, the approach that they've been using of sending in the army has not worked. In fact, it's made the problem worse. So what are they going to do to address it?
Now, that has been President Calderon's strategy, to send in the army. Why has that been ineffective?
There are a couple problems. One, in places like Monterrey, you go there and you see the army everywhere. They're basically being asked to be a shadow police force. And the problem is that the army's not really trained for this kind of work. So inevitably, they commit abuses. And when they do, then the army is sent to military courts. And the military court's record is basically zero for thousands. There have been 5,000 complaints against the army before the National Human Rights Commission in Mexico over the Calderon administration. Only one soldier has been sentenced in this period.
Now, there was less of this sort of thing under the previous government, the pre-government, which remained in power for much of the 20th century. Because they made accommodations with the drug cartels?
The PRI controlled everything, not only drug trafficking, land reform, industry, business, but it was really a top-down model. And in 2000, when after 70 years of PRI control, they lost the presidency, that agreement fractured. And basically, at a local level, politicians could make the deals they wanted.
But so has drug trafficking always been a part of the story in Mexico?
It has. What's changed is that it used to be that the PRI and the army could keep a lid on the violence. Now what we're seeing is that the old arrangement, the army is simply not strong enough, the government is not strong enough to keep these cartels under control.
And Calderon, who is the second president from the PAN party, the more conservative party, if we can call it left and right because it gets very complicated, doesn't it? He sent the military in, the army in, because the police were considered corrupt? Is the army any less corrupt?
Well, it is a fair question of what do you do if you're not going to send in the army? Who can you trust? And it's a fair assessment that the police are extremely corrupt in Mexico. The problem is not that he sent in the military. It's that when the military started to do things wrong, they haven't been held accountable. And what happens when you don't hold the military accountable when they commit abuses is you lose the trust of the civilian population. So people now are afraid of the military and they're afraid to share intelligence with them.
Are people nostalgic for the pre-drug cartel days?
I think that there is a strong nostalgia in Mexico now for the old pre-arrangement. The we'll look one way, we'll control the deals, you look the other.
Now, in Monterrey, didn't the mayor make some kind of similar deal with the drug cartels?
The current mayor in a town called San Pedro, which is the wealthiest suburb of Monterrey, announced the day that he was inaugurated that he was going to create what he called a tough squad to basically make a deal with cartels and keep all the bad elements out.
This is Mauricio Fernandez, and he called it the Grupo Rudo.
Right.
Which, what, the rude group?
The tough guys, uh-huh. The tough group, yeah.
People like the idea that he's saying, okay, we're going to recognize that the drug cartels are here. That's just the way things are, and try to accommodate them?
Well, people knew what they were getting with Mauricio because he said in his campaign that he was willing to make a deal with the cartel in San Pedro. What people were surprised by were the tactics. You know, the day that he was inaugurated, he announced that a very dangerous cartel boss wouldn't be a problem anymore. And hours later, he was found in the trunk of a car in Mexico City, 400 miles away.
So he had made a deal with one of the competing cartels to get rid of this guy.
Well, you know, I met with Mauricio, and his take is that he'll tell you that what he does is he pays the cartels for intelligence. So he knew it was coming. But there are signs that his Grupo Rudo is doing a little bit more than paying for.
And doesn't he have a multi-million-dollar intelligence bunker?
He has cameras all over the city, surveillance cameras. He has paid informants, he says, on every block.
So does this deal imply that the drug trade is allowed to move through San Pedro?
The agreement is somewhat nebulous, but the idea is safety first at any cost, and that means making deals with organized crime.
And then the United States ended its ban on assault weapons in 2004. That seems to have had an impact on the drug war in Mexico.
Certainly, both the supply of heavy weapons coming from the U.S. and the demand for the drugs going to the U.S. is a key element in the in the drug war in Mexico. Without either of those elements, it's hard to imagine Mexico being as violent as it is now.
So does the Mexican government protest, complain to the United States that they're finding all of these guns that have been moved across the border from the United States?
Absolutely. Every time President Calderon comes to the U.S., and he mentioned it in his speech to Congress several times, he hammers on these issues. To be fair, the Obama administration has conceded that this is an issue and that they need to deal with it.
Well, how cooperative has the United States been with the Mexican government in trying to stem the violence? Because this is more than stemming the violence. You point out that we're talking about the equivalent of the old-fashioned mafia in this country, every kind of criminal activity. And that's the sort of thing that has to spill over the border.
Well, it hasn't yet. In terms of violence spilling over, we haven't seen, although there are many congressmen in the border states that will tell you that they need National Guard troops now. There's no spillover.
Well, there were a few American officials who were killed in Juarez, weren't they?
They were killed in Mexico, that's true. But take the example of El Paso, which is right across the border from the most dangerous city in Mexico, Ciudad Juarez. El Paso is one of the safest cities in the U.S. They have less homicides in a year than Juarez has in some days. So the distinction I think that's important to make is the U.S. has definitely supported Mexico in its war on drugs. We've committed $1.5 billion to Mexico since 2007 to fight this drug war.
Now, PRI had a rather spotty human rights record, including a massacre of students that still remains one of the great scandals of Mexican history. Are the human rights records of the Calderon administration any better?
Well, we're looking at a scale of violence in Mexico now that is unprecedented in recent time. There have been 40,000 people killed in the drug war. Now, Calderon will say that 90% of these victims are drug dealers and people associated with the cartels, but they've never been able to produce any evidence that shows that that's in fact true.
What's the Merida initiative, which was established with the Bush administration?
The Merida initiative sends hundreds of million dollars to Mexico every year for security cooperation. And the interesting thing that Merida did, and a very positive step, is it conditioned 15% of funds every year to human rights conditions. And those funds are not supposed to be released unless Mexico is meeting those conditions.
The Global Commission on Drug Policy recently issued a 24-page report which calls for the legalization of some drugs and an end to the criminalization of drug users. Is that position likely to be embraced by either the United States or Mexico?
Well, interestingly, many former presidents of Mexico, including Calderon's predecessor, Vicente Fox, has supported and advocated for this position. Calderon, not so much. I think that what the proposal goes to and the report goes to is that the roots of these problems can't be tackled with brute force.
Well, in the past, Mexico was mainly a supplier of marijuana that was grown in the country. But now all the drugs from South America, cocaine-based drugs, are also coming through it? Heroin?
Not only cocaine. Mexico is a cultivation place for heroin, for poppy. Methamphetamines are increasingly produced in Mexico, and so are all of the migrants that are smuggled now through Mexico are mostly smuggled by cartels.
Nick Steinberg is a researcher for Human Rights Watch, and his article, The Monster and Monterey, appears in the Nation. That's the current issue of The Nation?
That's right.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on our show today. It's a sad story. I used to love to go to Mexico. Now I'm a bit afraid.
Well, there are parts of Mexico where I'm sure you could still have a safe time.